Session number 7266, Reel 5.
General Lloyd, Reel 5.
I'd just like to tell you briefly about my experience with this scratch battery of artillery. And the experience is this. When I eventually got back to England, I was very astonished to notice that the British newspapers had been full of maps of northern France and the Pas-de-Calais area, and showing the Dunkirk perimeter as being occupied by ourselves, and then a huge black area stretching down roughly to the Seine, which was shown as being completely occupied by the Germans. In fact, of course, that wasn't the case. The black area, which was shown as being occupied by the Germans, was in fact a no-man's land occupied by Germans and ourselves, and to some extent the French and the Belgians, milling about in, quite literally a melee. I can remember, for example, in one particular period of 24 hours, my scratch battery at one point was firing north, and at another point was firing east, and at another point was firing south, and we did, in fact, fire a few shots to the west, and this was all in the period of 24 hours. And this was in an area somewhere, I'm not quite sure of the exact spot, but somewhere between Arras and Abbeville. And quite apart from that, I was sent with one staff car to reconnoitre Arras after the expeditionary force had left. And I think I told her that we went right into the market square at Arras, identified one headquarters, one building which was occupied by HQBEF, and in it there was a cellar with a telephone which happened to be ringing, which was why we went into the cellar. On picking up the phone, we found that we were connected direct to the War Office in Britain. I have a souvenir of that event, as we were sent to check up, among other things, on the destruction of secret documents, and I came across the delegated court-martial warrant given to Lord Gort, empowering him to giving him the power over general courts-martial in the zone of the BEF, and this is now one of my prized war souvenirs. In fact, I have it upstairs.
Did this happen at an early or late stage of the mobile phase of the campaign?
All I can say with certainty is that the perimeter around Dunkirk had been substantially completed at the time, so I assume that the period that I'm talking about would be about the middle of the period of the Dunkirk evacuation. We eventually went back through Abbeville at the mouth of the Seine, and one of the most terrible experiences I had at that part of the campaign was of seeing a dive bombing attack on refugees occupying the road through Abbeville from north to south, well, northeast to southwest. And the road received several direct hits, and there were masses of blood and carcasses of civilians up to about 20 feet high on the houses on either side of the road. Horrible.
Now, if I can go back a bit into a bit more detail about some things, you were talking about the division being put on lines of communication work. What does that mean in more detail? What did the division have to do?
Well, as you probably know, a lines of communication, in the old sense of the term, were mainly routes, supply routes, from the front to the base depots, having, for example, a route for supplies of food and provisions, a route for the supply of ammunition, a route for the supply of material, meaning mainly weapons, infantry weapons, artillery weapons, and the like, and a route for the, of course, in modern warfare, a route for the supply of petrol. There was also, I remember in those days, a unit called the Lines of Communication Signals, which had the job of establishing signal communication of all sorts between the base depots and the front line. And there were also, and this is where we came in, units called Lines of Communication Troops, because usually a line of communication is not a very well-established area, at least in the initial stages of a campaign. You're always liable to have forays by the enemy into the lines of communication area and also saboteurs. And thus there are always a number of infantry units and light motorized units, I suppose you would call them, assigned to protect the supply units on the lines of communication proper. Mm.
So your work is mainly to try and secure the lines of communication
and the units
moving along them.
That's right.
How did you do that? What sort of policy was there for...
Well, I can't really tell you because we never, in fact, adopted this role. We no sooner started to organise and move into this role, then we were turned into a reinforcement unit. And, of course, this was very, very much a scratch operation. You see, we had no artillery except for the few weapons that came from the ordnance depots and were on their way up to the front. We had we hadn't even got the proper regimental infantry weapons, such as the 2-pounder anti-tank gun, the boys' anti-tank rifle. We didn't even have those. And we had no armoured cars. And so the only real role that we could adopt was a static role. And in fact, the only thing that the division eventually did was to turn itself into a force called Peter Force. That's P-E-T-R-E Force, because the divisional commander was General Peter. The very famous Roman Catholic family of the same name.
Now, what...
excuse me. And just so that I can get this off while I remember it, the very first line taken up by Peter Force, this was... while I was still with it, was along the Seine, between Abbeville and Amiens.
So you're trying to hold the river.
The river, yes. Which, of course, as you probably know, isn't really a river any longer. It's a marshy, a very broad strip of marshy land stretching from Abbeville to Amiens.
presumably you're on the firm southern edge of that.
That's right, that's right.
And what sort of positions could the division prepare in that area?
Well, it is, apart from the marsh surrounding the River Somme proper, on to the north of the river and to the south of the river, there's an area which is very roughly similar to the South Downs, with the Downs being rather smaller even than the South Down. And the positions were the usual slit trenches forming a forward line of defended localities. No sooner had we occupied the very first line along the Somme than we were driven out by German attacks, flanking attacks, and from then on we retreated from river line to river line. I think the first one we occupied after the Seine was the River Brail. And I believe there is another river between the Brail and the Seine, but if so, I can't remember it. Eventually, we got back to the River Seine. Perhaps I'd better pause there.
What sort of slit trenches were they? Were they two-man?
I would call them three-man. I have one vivid memory of such a trench. I was sent to deliver a message to the brigade commander of, I think, the 37th Brigade. And when I got forward to the area of the brigade headquarters, I was told that the brigadier was forward in one of the FDLs, and I went forward as directed. And while I was trying to deliver this message, a German mortar bomb went slap into the slit trench at my feet, exploded, blew up the brigadier and his and the officer he was talking to, but left me standing on the lip completely unharmed. From which I deduce that the trench must have been about 5 feet deep or thereabouts.
This was on the Somme line?
On the Somme line, yes, yeah. Incidentally, that reminds me that the in the whole of my war experience, the weapons that I liked least of all was the mortar.
Why was that particularly?
Oh, I was just about to say it's uppermost on my tongue. I think it's because of the almost vertical angle of descent. It's very disconcerting to be standing somewhere and seeing no flash or anything in front of one, but having this terrific shell coming out of nowhere, roughly, approximately vertically, and diving straight down onto you. Disconcerting.
It was the unexpected arrival.
Unexpected arrival. The difference between that and, say, a Stuka dive bomber is, of course, that the dive bomber has this special gadget on it that causes the whistling noise as it comes down, which is designed to terrify. But if you're a trained soldier, of course, it doesn't, in fact, terrify. It merely enables you to identify the probable line of attack and take avoiding action. But there's nothing I found there's nothing you can do about a mortar bomb. Nothing whatsoever.
Was this explosion the first experience you had of being under fire?
No. Oh, no, I'd been under fire from rifle fire long before, rifle and machine gun fire long before that.
This was in the confused period?
In the confused period, you know, when I, as I told you, I went forward to Arras and also to a probe in the direction of Dunkirk, which is roughly, what, it's north west, isn't it, Dunkirk, northwest of Arras, did a probe in that direction, came under fire and retreated, reported, of course.
Was this before or after the Arras reconnoitring?
Before.
And what was the intention behind that? Was it just to see if a road was open?
Well, the intention, you see, I should have told you this before when you asked me the question about orders and so on. The confusion became very great. The first bit of information we were given was that the expeditionary force had two divisions up and one in reserve with the Belgians on our left flank and the French on our right flank. And as far as we knew, that was the situation. But General Peter, I think, became very suspicious that the Belgians and the French were not in the position that they'd been said to be in. And, of course, we now know that this was true and that, in fact, the Belgians and the French had both retreated and the expeditionary force was left out on a limb. And it was at that point that I was sent forward with a group to do a reconnaissance towards the Anglo-Belgian boundary, which was in the direction of Dunkirk.
And at that time, had you had any contact with the enemy?
That was, in fact, the first contact that we made with the enemy, that I ever made with the enemy.
So you were, in effect, the spearhead?
Well, not quite. I would say the flank head. I'm not sure, but I believe we also had patrols out on the right flank and that they made contact with the enemy before we did.
When you went on this patrol, were you on your own or did you have an escort?
It's an exaggeration to say that there was a patrol. It merely consisted of myself and a couple of others in a staff car.
With a couple of others, the driver?
A driver and another soldier. And most of the time, of course, owing to the refugee situation, we weren't on roads, we were going across country.
In the car.
And it was possible to do this because of the intensely hard ground, because of the hot, dry summer. I don't suppose that any unit in the 12th Division moved for more than, say, 2 consecutive miles along a road. Apart from that, it was a question of going into one field and out the next and so on.
In their vehicles?
Yes, yeah.
When you went off on this drive, what were you supposed to be doing? Just finding out what on earth was going on ahead
Yes, just probing. It was quite extraordinarily difficult. I don't know whether I can paint a word picture of it. If you can imagine that wherever one came across a road, it was bound to be occupied by refugees. If it was a main road, the road would be just densely packed with refugees. If it was a side road, there'd be a straggling of refugees. But in any case, it wasn't possible to drive along the road with any degree of freedom at all. To get any sort of freedom of manoeuvre, you just had to take to the fields. My impression is of going from one orchard with, of course, as you know, the French orchards, all the trees all touch one another and give a sort of continuous canopy overhead, out of one orchard, across a field, into another orchard, across a field, into another orchard, and so on.
How far did you get before you were turned back by this encounter with the enemy?
Well, it's difficult to get a frame of reference. assuming the divisional headquarters to have been round about Abbeville, which I think was probably about right, then I suppose we went about 70 miles from there before making contact, and then back about 30 miles, find some way of communications, usually by telephone, and then making one's way back to divisional headquarters.
How did the contact actually occur? What happened?
Well, I was driven forward. We became suspicious because the flow of refugees had ceased quite abruptly. And I got out and got forward with my to a line of hedgerows with my field glasses. I'd no sooner put them to my eyes, and I hadn't seen a single thing, when bullets started whistling by my ears. So I rapidly beat a rapid retreat.
Did you see where the bullets were coming from?
Eventually, yes. And it was a German machine gun. A German motorcycle platoon. The motorbikes and sidecars were very clearly visible. They were dismounted, however, and had machine guns and rifles mounted and were occupying a line.
How far away from you were they when they opened up?
I would think about 400 yards.
Were they in the open?
No, along a line of trees.
Was this line of trees the edge of a wood, or was it part of a
hedgerow? On the edge of a wood. On the edge of a wood. On the front edge of a wood.
You say it was a platoon. Have you got any idea of the numbers of machines that were there?
Well, I called it a platoon because that's the smallest unit that is commanded by an officer in the German army. There were five or six motorcycles and sidecars visible to me. And I should think an estimate of a platoon is roughly right.
And what action did you take next?
Just to go back. Having made contact, those were my orders.
You went back to the car?
You went back to the car. The car by that time had reversed in accordance with orders, you know, and was facing in the opposite direction, and we just made off.
You didn't return the fire?
Oh, no, no.
And the Germans didn't attempt to pursue you?
No, no attempt whatsoever. And that bears out what has been my general idea of the situation at those times, and that is that the Germans were just as surprised to find us as we were to surprise them. And there was no indication, as we were subsequently led to believe, of a purposeful advance on the part of the Germans. I think they were just as, if I can put it like this, they were just as tentative in their method of approach as we were to them. And I assume that their confusion was just as great as ours was.
So they're putting their antennae out rather than actually.
Antennae out. That's right. It's a very very good way of putting it.
And this visit to Arras, what was the purpose of that when you were sent up?
Oh, that was. I think that could be called purely a security operation. That is to say that. I think the British worry was that perhaps the evacuation of Arras had not been as complete as had been intended. From what I could see, it was in fact complete. And as I think I said earlier, we certainly came across no secret documents. Confidential documents, perhaps, no secret ones. All the secret ones had apparently been evacuated. And, as I say, the the most momentous document I came across in a hurried search was the delegated field warrant.
When you went into Arras, how many of you were there? How many of you went into?
And on that occasion, it was three cars. Three cars with about 12 people, 12 or so people altogether. And our orders were to make a hurried search of the general headquarters area, which was, I think, if that is investigated, it will turn out to have been all the buildings around the main market square.
I think the main one was the Palace of St. Vast.
Was it? Oh, yes. Well, very likely.
And did you see anything of the enemy on that expedition?
No, none at all. Not a single... No, not at all.
And what about civilians? Were there any of them in Arras?
Very few. Very, very few. Just a few people slinking about.
What sort of condition was the town in?
Oh, just a deserted town.
No signs of any damage?
No damage, as far as we could see at all. I don't think in World War II that Arras was in fact bombed, was it? Mm. It was?
Yep, had been bombed quite heavily.
Oh, had it? Yep. Oh, yes. Well, not when we were there, certainly. Mm. So it must have been bombed after GHQ left. Mm. They didn't leave because of bombing, did they?
No, not really.
No, that's what I thought.
They left because there was a German tank thrust.
Oh, that was it,
coming
yes.
southwards, and they went northwards.
Oh, yes, I see. Yes. I didn't know that. Well, perhaps we could leave it there, could we? Mm. That'd be all right.
Yeah. Yes.